Hello and welcome, I'm Pooja Sarkar and you're listening to the podcast from the bookshelves of Forbes India. Before I get into today's book, there is a funny story that I want to tell. Not really funny, but a story that I would like to tell. I remember it was a rainy evening in 2017 and there was this massive conference for which the entire NPCI hall, which is opposite Haj Ali in Mumbai, it was booked. And it was booked by Xiaomi, the smartphone manufacturer, to present its new phone. The room was full with people. There were tech bloggers, there were analysts, there were buyers. People were there. I mean, there was no space in that room at all. And there was this frenzy about this phone that is being launched in India. Now, not many people who live in Mumbai would have heard of such an event because rarely do we see any smartphone maker come and connect with their buyers at this scale. Later, I did meet Lei Jun for a conversation, and although he only spoke in Chinese and we had to use a translator, his agenda was clear. He wants to bring cheaper phones to India, and obviously he wants to manufacture in India and become one of the largest smartphone makers in the country. Now, in this book, the book is called Xiaomi, which has been written by Jaidev and PK. He actually traces the journey of how China opened its market for smartphones with Motorola and how that brought lessons for entrepreneurs in China, including Lei Jun, the man behind Xiaomi. Interestingly, Lei Jun has actually completed his studies a little earlier than others, and he was a very smart kid and he comes from a very humble background. And in the summer of 2010, Xiaomi Corporation, which was incorporated at that time, it did not actually start as a mobile handset company. It actually decided to launch itself as the company behind MIUI, an operating system based on Google's Android operating system. For more on this book, I have with me Jayadevan on our show today. And to listeners, thank you so much for being a part of our journey. Please do like, subscribe and share and find us on any of the platforms that you prefer. Thank you so much, Jayadevan, for being on our podcast. The book is really nice. And first to start with, how did you come about with the idea of writing on Xiaomi?
So I was a journalist in Bangalore some 15 years ago, and I started tracking technology for the New Indian Express. And it was pretty much that whole era of, you know, you're moving from feature phone to smartphone. It was just the beginning of that. Eventually, I moved on to different papers. I started covering startups and technology in general, and IT services companies, etc. So as I was reporting, I had been to China a couple of times. I had been to Beijing and, you know, Shanghai and a couple of other places. The first time I went to China, it was before the Olympics, and the city was already Beijing was already undergoing a huge transformation. And then I went there after, you know, a couple of years ago. Beijing was buzzing. It was like huge. Things had changed a lot. And you could say it was the physical version of 10x growth. And I was really surprised. So I went to this park called Haidian Park, where they would have like a lot of AI powered technology on display. And China was really sort of showcasing its technology prowess. And in that, there were many companies in China, which were, you know, several companies like Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, TikTok, and all of these companies. They were all growing in within China. And there were these companies like Xiaomi. And I saw that, you know, in India, when they launched, they grew really fast. They became number one. So I wanted to really understand what is the blueprint. What are those elements that really make this company successful? Mm-hmm. And if you look closer, you'll see that Xiaomi is just a 10-year-old company. And the others in the top three smartphone category, you have Apple and Samsung. Apple was founded in 1970s with a long legacy of, you know, good hardware chops. And Samsung similarly in the 30s. These companies are important companies, but look at this newcomer who's suddenly come in from nowhere and become number three in the world. So I thought that was an exciting company to track. And that's how I got excited about it. When finally the lockdown happened, I sort of sat down and decided to finish the book. And now we have it. So.
Great. In fact, there's this interesting part that you, I mean, I saw in the early chapters of the book where you wrote about, you know, of the third quarter of 2020, 353.6 million mobile phones were shipped worldwide, according to the data from International Data Corporation. But how has really the market evolved from China? And if you could talk about those early chapters of your book, which gives really insightful instances about how the smartphone market shaped up in China.
China was a buzzing market for smartphones in from 2010 onwards, because there were millions of Chinese people who went from lower income group to middle income group. And by some estimates, there are about 300 million Chinese who did that. So that's a huge trend where there was a lot of demand for better products was established. So China became a huge market. It became the world's largest consumer market. So that's one trend. Trend number two was that if you rewind a little more, right, like how did China become, a large consumer market? It was because it grew as a manufacturing base. It became the factory of the world. And how did that happen? Because it had, you know, companies like Motorola, Nokia, etc., going into China and setting up factories there to save costs of manufacturing. So they said, hey, you've got work and we're ready to do it. Let's build factories. And this is how Nokia and Motorola came up. At the time when Xiaomi was founded, 2010, you had 400 brands. Now, how did these 400 brands come to be? Because there was this tiny chip from MediaTek, a company called MediaTek, which was a reference design in effect, around which you could build an entire smartphone. So you had, you know, a lot of what you call Shanzai phones in China. So Shanzai is a word for copycat, or, you know, a lot of knockoffs. It is in this context that Xiaomi comes in and launches and grows and becomes a huge company in China itself. Xiaomi was one of the very early companies which really figured out, let's not do advertising. Let's have fans really back our products, and let's, you know, let's win the market through them. And all of this really helped Xiaomi win the market. I would say this is how it was in China. They became one of the largest players in the market. And then they had a global ambition, mainly because at that time, China also had wanted to build global companies. The government was supportive of these companies. This is where, you know, we sort of end that chapter in which we talk about what was happening in China.
Mm-hmm. True. And, you know, you talked about that Xiaomi did not start as a mobile handset company, choosing instead to launch itself as the company behind the operating system, which was based on Google's Android operating system. And in fact, they launched as a mobile phone maker only in August 2011. Could you talk about the early days of Xiaomi? Who were the founders? And if I'm not wrong, founders actually broke up. So if you could tell the listeners about Xiaomi, its founders, and its early days.
Xiaomi had one key driver behind the company, which is Lei Jun, that he was like the core element for the company. So he's like somebody who brought all the other founders together. So this includes someone called Lin Bin, who was at Google China at that point, you know, and several others. So maybe 8 or 9 co-founders at that point. Now, as Lei Jun was sort of, you know, putting all of these plans together, they had, you know, Xiaomi said, let's not build hardware right from the get-go. We'll build software. And the reason for that is, I suspect it is because Xiaomi didn't want to get into a capital intensive business right from the get-go. Like hardware would have meant, you know, all kinds of, you know, investment in factories, etc. It was conceived as an internet company, and it continues to believe that it is an internet company. So Xiaomi says, we are an internet company. We are not a smartphone seller. We are not a, you know, hardware maker, but we are an ecosystem company, or we are an internet company. So that's, to that end, Xiaomi wanted to go in with the MIUI, which was which grew really fast. And this is what gave Xiaomi a lot of his early backers. Interesting bit here is to see how they would develop features which were voted by fans. So until then, smartphones were made by, you know, committee and design and all of that. Xiaomi said, it looks like people are asking for a set of features, but let's actually ask people. And every week or 2 weeks, they would say, these features have been asked the most by users. Let's build it and ship it. And they would ship it within 2 weeks. And they used to have this day called Orange Friday when they would ship a new product. What this does is people really got the feeling that these guys are listening to us and we are co-creating the product. Now, this is another huge trend which is playing out in the consumer mindset, which is you don't want to be transactional with brands. You don't want to simply buy a product and use them, but you want to be participate in that brand story. This is democratic design in software. So they would really listen to users and ship out features quickly and fast. So this is, I think, what really won it the early, you know, adopters.
Mm-hmm. Right now, what is it that is driving Xiaomi? Is it the same concept as before 10 years back, that the consumers are fans and that's why it's been able to grow? What really is driving Xiaomi in today's time?
So today, Xiaomi has a large base of users, so which includes the users of MIUI, which is the operating system, which is being shipped on Xiaomi phones, right? So that's your smartphone business. So that's your staple. Now you have, Xiaomi has a very clever thing, which is called the ecosystem strategy, right? Like, you know, which is, if I have experienced the Xiaomi brand through any product, which is, let's say, smartphone, it was my first experience with any Xiaomi product. Now Xiaomi started selling everything, right? Like, you know, it would sell a pen, it would sell a laptop, it sells soap dispensers, it sells a bunch of things. Now, it is saying we are going to sell credible alternatives at affordable prices. And they call it honest prices. So which means they're saying we will not profit more than 5% from hardware. If you take India's case, they are now number one in smart TVs. They're number one in fitness trackers. They're number one in a bunch of areas. So I think this whole strategy of what you call land and expand is beautiful. This whole playbook has been thrown out of the window by companies like Amazon. They're saying, hey, I'm not just a retailer. I will give you streaming, but I will also give you, you know, a bunch of other services. I will sell my own product, all of this, and I will still make money as a company. Now, this is a very complex machinery which comes together and is, you know, kind of made to work. So I think that definitely builds a moat for companies like Xiaomi as they go along in the future. Xiaomi's future is not just as a hardware company, as an internet company. I think Xiaomi is definitely has the potential to unlock a lot more value in the future.
Okay. When did they really come to India? What really helped them build their case in India?
Definitely the fact that companies like Flipkart were growing and they were looking to, you know, have exclusive tie-ups with smartphone brands. So when Xiaomi got into India, it went with Flipkart and it started doing flash sales. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, Xiaomi was able to create a lot of, you know, buzz around the product. They made the first few flash sales like really big. And there was so much of frenzy around the brand and the product that, you know, it was unbelievable, really, because, you know, in the earlier days, you would have phone launches with, you know, maybe the top executives, and then there's a press conference and all of that. But now you're talking about bloggers and thousands of fans coming together and celebrating the launch of a brand or a new product. Now, what Xiaomi also did was that, you know, it didn't stay online. It went offline after a few, you know, after it became one of the largest online selling smartphones in the country. We were used to Micromax phones or, you know, Lava phones and some of those phones at that time. Another factor that really contributed was the emergence of 4G. So companies like Micromax and, you know, at that time, Indian companies were on 3G. And suddenly Xiaomi's, you know, first phone, second phone, all of them were directly in 4G. And when this technology shift happened, when people are making their buying decisions, nobody wanted a 3G phone anymore. So they just went after a 4G. So all of this created like a huge demand for the product itself.
True. What has really held their case in not just the, you know, not just India or African markets, even they are present in the European markets. What has really helped their case in these economies?
I think once Xiaomi got the blueprint right for globalization, I think they went with the same playbook, you know, in different markets. Before Xiaomi, most Chinese companies would have were run by remote control from the HQ, either in Beijing or Shanghai and all of these cities. You know, once they brought on Hugo Bara, who came from Google, they completely internationalized the brand. So Hugo Bara was the face of Android by then. Like, he was doing product launches, and he was really loved by, you know, basically the you know, Android ecosystem, like the geeks and the developers and all of them. Hugo comes from MIT, and MIT Technology Review started featuring Xiaomi as one of the most innovative companies in the world. Now, all of this changed the perception of the brand. That is number one. Number two, it started, you know, Hugo set up these country operations to have a lot more autonomy in terms of, you know, how they do business. And I think that really helps a company win in the market, respond quickly to the local changes and adapt. This is where I think it succeeds in local markets.
True. And coming to the part, you know, you talk about Manu Jain in your book. For the listeners, could you talk about how he was really the only India face that the company had in its initial days, and what's really happening with him?
Yeah, absolutely. So Manu was this entrepreneur who started a company called Jabong with a co-founder. And Jabong was doing all right. It was an e-commerce company, and it used to compete with Myntra and others. But it didn't have the kind of depth in terms of financing or the kind of market penetration to win in the long run. So, and that's how he joins Xiaomi. Now, he comes from a classic, you know, middle-class background, I want to say, that, you know, IIT, IIM, and, you know, studies really well, works really hard, and is a rank holder, a good student in that sense. So Manu moved out of Jabong and joined Xiaomi. In fact, in those days, no one in their right mind would join Xiaomi a Chinese company. And Manu later talks about this, but he still did it because he saw the strength of the product and he was a fan himself. So that really helped Manu. Manu was one of the few Indians who worked at Xiaomi. Then they brought in folks like Jayamani and, you know, a bunch of others. They brought in Raghu Reddy. They built a whole team of very young but hungry executives. And they built the rest of the Xiaomi by hiring fans. So Xiaomi had this idea of, let's not hire, you know, like regular professionals to work with us, but let's as much as we can try and hire fans, because they'll work harder and they'll work for cheaper, and they would be passionate about the brand itself. So, and that shows in how the product is built, how it's sold. Manu himself is a workaholic, is what I've heard. He works hard, very thoughtful leader in terms of when he started, and this is based on my conversations with some early employees, is when he started, he was a certain kind of leader. But as he grew, as the company grew, he was able to level up every year. And one of the things that he would do here is to ask a lot of questions to the right kind of people and not try and do everything by himself. So from a personal journey point of view, he's leveled up quite a bit. The momentum also carries you through and gives you a lot of energy as you build companies. So I think the momentum really helped Xiaomi and Manu build this company out.
True. I think everybody in the world knows about Wuhan for all the wrong reasons. But I think Lei Jun went to Wuhan to study engineering, and he finished in 2 years instead of 4 years, right? And a lot of us have this impression of people from China that, you know, oh, if they're building a company, they must be someone who had wealth or who's connected or things like that. But Lei Jun actually comes from a very humble background, in fact. Could you talk about a little more about Lei Jun and his background a little?
Lei Jun is this, again, you know, studious, and his biographer Chen Run describes him as a good student, you know, in his biography. And he says, to a certain extent, he was a geek. He used to be on the computer all the time, you know, and when he went to university in Wuhan, he spent way too much time on the computer, and he started building software. his first software was called BitLock. It was an antivirus software. And then he built a bunch of other things. Legend was fixated on becoming, taking part in this whole internet technology product journey. And that's how he joins Kingsoft. Kingsoft was like the Microsoft of China at that time. They had word processors, and the founder of Kingsoft, again, was a very illustrious programmer who is said to, the legend has it that he sat up like, you know, a few days and coded the entire Chinese word processor for Kingsoft in a few days. And Legend really looked up to these guys. So he went and he worked at Kingsoft. The company grew, but piracy was a huge problem in China, like, you know, not just for Kingsoft, but everything. And number two, you already had Microsoft. You know, Microsoft was a tough competitor in China. So Kingsoft never really became that huge, massive success that we see now with companies like with, let's say, TikTok, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in valuation, you know, or let's say, you know, Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, all of these companies. Legend always wanted to leave his legacy, and he wanted to build a global company. You know, so there was this interesting incident that I read about is they would go to the canteen and challenge the, you know, canteen owner to play mahjong. And if they won, they would get the meal for free. And this became their way of life. Another interesting bit about Legend is before, you know, building in public became a thing, right? Like, you know, when nowadays almost all startups start building in public, which is as they build their company, they talk about the lessons that they learned and all of these. What Legend did, he did this in 2009-10 when he was like very actively blogging, and he was telling, this is how I see the computer ecosystem evolve. This is how I see the mobile internet ecosystem evolve. Here are the things that made me a successful entrepreneur. And he would tell a lot of stories. I think building in public was a core part of Xiaomi's DNA. And as the company grew, you know, Legend stopped blogging, but it was part of Xiaomi's DNA to build in public, talk about the features, etc. The other thing is Legend was also a very successful angel investor. He had like a bunch of companies that he invested in their early days. Legend was a very seasoned entrepreneur who's made mistakes and learned from that. And Xiaomi looks like he's brought all of these strategies together to build a modern sort of, you know, company.
Mm-hmm. But then, lastly, you know, before I let you go, there is this thing with Xiaomi. Even when it started, there was this competitor who said that, you know, Legend kept in meeting them for an investment, but at the end of the day, they ended up launching a company, which is obviously Xiaomi, which is on the similar lines of that company. And even if we see in 2014, Ericsson had charged Xiaomi India for infringing 8 of its patents that is registered in India, and they had an out-of-court settlement. There are a lot of these, court cases, or let's say litigations, that are coming up against Xiaomi for a lot of these infringement rights, etc. What are the troubles that are coming up at Xiaomi, and especially Xiaomi India, and what is really the way forward for the company?
Patents definitely is a problem. But it's not a problem that doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. Usually what happens is most of the patent cases are settled out of court. This is kind of, you know, a problem for a lot of companies. And usually they are settled out of court. And I feel like this is not going to be one of those company killer problems. Because again, you can shore up your patent portfolio, you can buy patents, you can buy companies, you can buy open source patents, you can build the entire piece and defend your company against all of these challenges. So I think patents can be solved. The big challenge, I think, is geopolitics and how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at some point, if relationship between India and China becomes really bad, mm-hmm. and this is a big if, you know, we have a lot of trade happening with, you know, China. So it's a big if, but if it gets to a point where things are not getting better, then, you know, companies like Xiaomi, you know, and several other, you know, like we saw recently, like India banned a bunch of, you know, app companies in India, you know, Chinese app companies. So all of that can happen. I think this can be a challenge in the future. One thing that might work in Xiaomi's advantage is that Xiaomi has been very active in making in India, and they take they also make sure that everybody knows this, that you know they have created thousands of jobs. Almost all of their smartphones are assembled in India. About 60-70% of their components are sourced from India. And Xiaomi also, to their credit, they brought a large ecosystem of Foxconn, Wistron, and all of these companies together to manufacture in India for India. So that way, you know, so far Xiaomi has been protected, has had a good run. But if things go really bad, you know, that could be a challenge in the future. COVID was a challenge, you know, in the beginning. The supply chain was disrupted, and it was not, you know, specific to Xiaomi, but it was all of these companies had troubles. They have recovered pretty well, if you ask me. Their sales numbers are back on track this year. Another big question mark is around how the internet itself evolves, right? Like, you know, users, even if we are in India, or, you know, even if we are buying not the most premium devices, we don't want to be advertised mercilessly to. We want to be treated with a clean UI and UX. And a whole lot of Xiaomi's internet company strategy lies on making money off of advertisement. So Xiaomi will have to think about how do we, you know, deal with this? How do we sort of make money off of other services? So it could be music, it could be streaming, it could be, they have even invested in like fintech companies like CreditBee and all of that. So can you shore up your revenues and still be an internet company and not just, you know, a hardware company?
True. Thank you so much, Jayadevan, for your time today.